Hello there and welcome to another episode of Musings on Golf, where you'll hear superb stories from Lanny Watkins, a past winner of the Players' Championship, and you'll hear from Scottie Scheffler, who just became the first back-to-back winner of the premier event on the PGA Tour. I'm Kelly Elbin, along with my co-host and good buddy Bob Bupka. Bob, our listeners were treated to riveting golf over the weekend, and man, are they going to love what they hear today from Lanny Watkins.
Well, I tell you what, we love doing favors for our listeners because I believe we have the best podcast listeners in the world. We certainly have the best sponsors. Lanny Watkins, he delivered an Oscar award winning performance. I mean, I'm just going to give a little tidbit. Lanny Watkins actually played 18 holes of golf at Augusta with none other than Gene Sarazen. Are you kidding me? When I said, wow, you certainly know a lot about the history of the game. He said, Bob, I am the history of the game. I thought that was one of the best responses we've ever gotten from one of our guests. Lanny was terrific. I know all of our Musings on Golf listeners are going to be thrilled to death with that.
Well, and Lanny, he won his Players' Championship when it was played at Sawgrass Country Club, basically across the street before the TPC at Sawgrass was ready. And boy, was that riveting, exciting action over the weekend, Bob. I felt bad for Wyndham Clark. He's clearly shown he can play on the major stages. Back-to-back 67s opening up, five up at the midpoint, the putt that lipped out on 18. But you have to hand it to Scottie Scheffler. And like Rory McIlroy said, when he gets that putter going, it's almost impossible for him to win or for him to be beaten. Back-to-back wins on tour and the first player ever to win the Players back-to-back. What a performance.
Yeah, and it was interesting to note, the putt by Wyndham Clark, everybody saw it that watched it on TV, went halfway down the hole on 18, popped out. Scottie Scheffler apparently didn't even see it happen. He was busy signing his scorecard and doing other things. And the only time he saw it was when he got to Golf Channel and they showed it to him for the first time. And Scottie sat there. All he said was, "That's tough." What a perfect response. He fully sympathized with Wyndham Clark. He certainly was elated that he had the opportunity to defend the Players for the first time in its 50-year history. Scottie Scheffler, now back-to-back wins. I get a little chuckle out of his caddy, Ted. My calculation, made about $900,000 the last 2 weeks. Pretty good payday. It puts him right into the Kelly Elbin category.
Well, I don't know about that, but it certainly puts him ahead of a lot of players on the PGA Tour. There's no question about that.
Good point.
Bob, I saw a lot of the action on TV, but I might have been patronizing a couple of pubs here in South Florida on St. Patrick's Day, so I didn't really hear any of the play-by-play call, but I will tell you that those around me, everyone, was in a good frame of mind. There were no losers where I was on Sunday.
It was a good guy doing a great thing. I mean, let's put it simple. And that started to get me thinking about nice guys that have been the number one player in the world. I thought automatically, well, Scottie Scheffler's got to be the nicest ever. But then other names popped into mind. Nick Price, he was a former number one, very nice guy. Luke Donald, former number one, very nice guy. So Scottie Scheffler joined some very, very impressive company. And boy, as people that are involved in the sport of golf, Kelly Elbin, we could not be luckier to have Scottie Scheffler as our number one ambassador.
Yeah, it's very true. And one of the guys who helped him immensely get to that celebration on St. Patrick's Day, of all people, a guy named Troy Van Beesen, who's the director of sports performance and science for the Dallas Stars of the National Hockey League. Scottie had some major issues, and Van Beesen, who's worked with a number of tour players, was called on and really helped him. I'm not sure that without the medical assistance he received before the rounds, during the rounds, he would have been anywhere near close to the winner's circle on Sunday, Bob. Sometimes that outside agency can really help you on the golf course.
Well, it certainly was the case in this point. On behalf of golf lovers everywhere, hey, thank you, Troy Van Beesen, for patching up our Scotty Scheffler. Deeply appreciated.
And here's what Scotty had to say about an unprecedented second straight win at the Players.
I needed some help, obviously, going in today if I wanted to win the tournament. I felt like if I could go out and shoot a good round on the front nine, I could put myself in it. Birdie on nine was huge, and, you know, I was right in the tournament the whole back nine. It was a hard-fought week. You know, a lot of guys played some really good golf this week. You know, a few of them finished at 19. I finished at 20. That's some really good golf around this course.
You know, Bob, there was a lot of talk I saw and read on Sunday about a players meeting with the head of the PIF. And sounds like that took place along with Jay Monahan, in the Bahamas yesterday. At least a productive meeting took place. Let's just hope that they make actual progress. You know, I finished reading Alan Shipnuck's unbelievable book, Live and Let Die. And I hate to say it, but I just, so much of what's happened, Bob, I lay at the feet of Jay Monahan. He did not react a couple of years ago when the Saudis approached him. And I really think that by not doing that, he put the PGA Tour behind the eight ball. And I think they've been scrambling ever since. Whatever comes of this, I just can't see Jay Monahan lasting a long time. You heard some of the players flat out saying they've lost confidence in him.
Yeah, they certainly have. And who knows, you know, Jay Monahan is Teflon Jay, as far as I'm concerned. And the only thing about what you just mentioned, I hate it when I hear the word secret meeting between tour players and LIV Golf. This is not a secret meeting between United States and China on, you know, world peace. I mean, this is golf. Why do we need secret meetings? Why can't they be open to the public? I mean, at least open to the players, you know, the tour players that are affected by it. I mean, just incredible. But by the way, we got to give a tip of the hat to Tony Kornheiser and Doug Ferguson. Both of those outstanding media personalities have made mention of Musings on Golf. And we certainly appreciate that and thank them for doing that. And boy, wasn't it emotional when we send off Roger Maltby and Gary Koch on Friday? Boy, those guys jumped back in the saddle. I closed my eyes and I thought it was 20 years ago. I'm listening to Maltby and I'm listening to Koch. No two guys have ever done it any better.
Yeah, it was a trip down memory lane. I'm glad that at NBC Sports decided to do that, to give those two guys a very proper send-off. And boy, Roger was really emotional, wasn't he, Bob, on Friday afternoon? Familiar voices, we know them. And when they're no longer there, we miss them. And in both of those guys, in the instance case of both those guys, they're really, really good at their craft. I mean, Maltby, the miles and miles he walked through the years and reporting, and Gary Koch, yeah, we laugh about, you know, the better than most stuff on the 17th when Tiger made that long, but their insight that they gave to viewers for years and years on NBC Sports, it was good to see them get the send-off that they richly deserve.
Well said there, Kelly Elvin, and certainly we're going to give a Musings on Golf tip of the hat to Kevin Kisner. He was on NBC over the weekend. Yep. I thought he did an outstanding job. His insight was very keen, and he alerted the viewers to some of the ins and outs that happened. So good job there, Kiz. Always knew you had it in you.
Yeah, and I think he might have very well locked it up, Bob. You know, I hate to say it for Kevin. I think his tour days are, his best days are behind him. He's missed some cuts. It's time, I think, for him to go up to the booth, and all signs point that way. Now, Bob, I know you enjoy a good Masters sandwich or two. And a couple of years ago, Miss Susie and I had a Masters watch party at my place, and we ordered this Taste of the Masters from Masters.com. If anybody's out there wants to do it again, just go to Masters.com. We're not getting anything for this, but I'm telling you, this classic kit, which serves 4 to 6, and this large hosting kit, which serves 12 to 14. You want the pimento cheese. You want the moon pies. You want the pork barbecue. It's all there. And the way it's presented and they ship it, it is just as you would expect. first class from Augusta National, and it is the next best thing to being there food-wise, Robert.
Well, if you say it's good, I'm going to trust you. I never had, well, I could never afford, you know, the Taste of Masters for my watch party. But
what'd you have, the taste of, you have the taste of peanut butter? What'd you have? Taste of peanut butter jelly?
There you go. That's my favorite. Egg salad. That's my favorite. Janice loved pimento cheese, so maybe we'll have to get that. Anyway, I know you want to tee up Lanny Watkins for us, please, Mr. Kelly Elbin, because he is a super interview.
Yeah, he is. Always been impressed by, you know, the confidence, the swagger, the strut of Lanny. And, you know, his win over Gene Littler was one for the ages back at Pebble Beach PGA Championship in 1977, 20 years Littler's junior, but somehow he was able to do that. And then his win at the Players' Championship. You're going to hear all of that great stuff from Lanny Watkins right after these messages. Introducing the epitome of golfing elegance and performance from William & Harry. Immerse yourself in style and unparalleled comfort as you step onto the green with William & Harry's unique durable deerskin and calfskin masterpiece. Unrivaled in its water-resistant design, the WH shoe, which is also available in private label, ensures that you stay focused on your swing even in unpredictable weather conditions. Elevate your game to where luxury meets peak performance. Step into excellence. Step into innovation at williamandharry.com.
We all aspire to outperform the player we were yesterday. The new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X can help reward your best swings like never before. Both models are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, we're thrilled to be joined by a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame Class of 2009. 21 times he won on the PGA Tour, including his historic victory at the 1977 PGA Championship and surviving some very harsh elements to capture the 79 Players Championship. Only Arnold Palmer won more Ryder Cup matches for the United States, and I can promise you that no one hit more drives off the deck and onto the fairway than the great Lanny Watkins. Hey, Lanny, welcome to Musings on Golf. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to be with you guys.
Lanny, I regard you as a real link between, you know, the modern golfers right now and the golfers that you had personal experience with in the past. I mean, you have to be awfully proud of the transition between the old timers and the new timers.
Well, I was lucky. My era that, you know, I came on tour 1971, fall of 71, and played about six tournaments. My Q school had guys like Weissman, Mahaffey, Melnick, Fleischer, John Mahaffey, David Graham. I mean, it was a lot of really good players in that Q school. So we came out at that point in time, and, you know, Arnold was still playing really well and winning tournaments, and Jack was really kind of hitting his prime, and Trevino was really coming on the scene strong. So Casper was kind of winding down, but I got to play a lot with him. And so the era that I played with there, I don't know that I'd trade anything for that. They were special people, and, you know, they really played a brand of golf that was fun to watch.
Well, let's bring it up to date, Lanny. What's up with you these days with the Golf Channel and other projects?
Well, I'm kind of winding down my TV work, if you will. I'm really employed right now by PGA Tour Productions, and I do the Champs Tour, and I'm only doing 12 events this year, and I'm not sure I'm going to do much next year at all. I'm doing some golf course design work. I've got a great partner and Kurt Mullman, who worked with Nicklaus for 15 years or so, and Kurt's very talented. We've got about five or six projects going right now, a lot for Invited. Doing some renovations, things like that, but enough to stay busy, kind of keep my hand in the game, if you will, and you know, I'll get out and enjoy the Champs Tour telecast this year and see some friends, and we'll see. I kind of feel like this is probably the last year or so, though.
Well, you sound very busy. Does that bring back memories? Your dad was a truck driver and your mom was a school teacher. Did a lot of your drive to succeed in golf come from, you know, not being born with a, you know, a gold spoon in your mouth?
Yeah, we were a very competitive family, and both my parents played sports. My mother played, you know, church league softball and any other sport she could play. She could actually hit a golf ball pretty well. And my dad had taken up golf when he came back from World War II. And, you know, as a youngster, he drove a truck. And a lot of times he was home on weekends and gone to play golf. And when I was about seven, he let me start I would go with him and pull his cart so I could spend time with my dad. And I told him I liked this game and got me started. We were just kind of the right place at the right time, my brother and I. My parents joined a club on the south side of Richmond, Meadowbrook Country Club. I think it was $250 to join at that point in time. Had a pro that loved kids and took my brother and I under his wing. And, you know, and we just played golf. We just went there and spent all our days with brand new course, not crowded. We were just in the right place at the right time to really play a lot and develop as kids.
Who was the golf professional who, you know, started mentoring you and Bobby?
It was a guy named J.G. Lumpkin. Popeye Lumpkin was his nickname, and he just loved kids. And we had a pretty good set of juniors at our club, and even the entire Richmond area. We had some other club pros there, George Byrd, Leo Steinbreaker, some other guys that really enjoyed and had great junior programs. We played the interclub matches. We'd jump in cars and go to Pinehurst and play the Dial Ross. They really stayed after us as kids. I think the fact it was so competitive is what got Bobby and I there. In fact, I think the thing that really helped us the most was learning in junior clinics with other kids. If you're competitive, you're going to want to be better and beat those kids. I think, and I thought so much about that, that when my boys started, I had them start in junior clinics with other kids. I thought if they're competitive and want to get better, they'll actually pay attention more and get better quicker, and it worked out well.
Did you and Bobby start playing about the same time?
Yeah, about the same time. I was probably seven or so, and he was six. We were only 18 months apart, you know, and a year apart in school. So we were always playing together as kids growing up all the way through high school. And, you know, we probably played as many rounds of golf together as any two people ever when he played with that.
I imagine there was a lot of intensity in those matches, huh?
There was a lot of intensity. A lot of times we had more arguments than anything else. I remember one time I walked ahead of him. He hit a 3-wood and hit me right in the back with a golf ball. But, you know, he's still proud that he hit a good shot. But that was we had our moments.
We were delighted to be joined here on Music Zone Golf by the great Lenny Watkins, class of 2009. In the World Golf Hall of Fame. Okay, Lanny, you got your nickname from your middle name. Is that correct?
That is correct. I'm a junior, Jerry Lanston Watkins Jr. And
they call my dad Jerry. So, yeah, my parents gave me Lanny. And as a kid, I never liked. In fact, I had some trophies early on that I won. I had Jerry put on them. I didn't like Lanny. How was that? Later on, it was probably a great thing because I was one of the guys that one name, you know who it is. So that worked out very well.
Now, when did you start getting comfortable with it?
Bobby is an early teenager, 13, 14, in that range. It was okay. You know, the better I played, the less people made fun of it. So that was a good thing. And, you know, I didn't want my boys to be Lanny Jr. So my boys were Travis Lanston and Tucker Lanston. I gave them the middle, you know, for their middle name, but they've got their own identity.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, so you went to Wake Forest, I believe it was on the Arnold Palmer Scholarship. Is that correct?
Yeah, technically the Buddy Worst Memorial Scholarship that was named after Arnold's roommate that died in a car accident while he was in school. He actually left school for a while and came back and finished. But yes, it was a Buddy Worst Memorial Scholarship. I played with Arnold the first time when I was 17 at an exhibition in Richmond. So I actually played with him before I went to Wake Forest. So that was very cool. We had an interesting history there with, you know, we got along really well. We played practice rounds at Augusta, you know, while I was in at Wake Forest. We, you know, I played twice in the Masters as an amateur. So I got to play with Arlen a couple of those years in practice, which was very cool. So it was a really neat experience getting to know him like that.
I want to ask you about winning the U.S. Amateur, but you, off the air before we came on, you mentioned about playing in the Masters and some practice rounds. You played with Mr. Sarazen. What was that like to play with Gene Sarazen at the Masters?
Well, it was pretty cool. I mean, my very first Masters round ever, I played with Jackie Burke, which in itself was pretty special. And then the second day, I was paired with Gene Sarazen. And I had enough presence of mind as a 20-year-old that when we got to 15, I asked him to walk across his bridge with me. Not a lot of people know that's the Sarazen Bridge left of the lake at 15 at Augusta. Everybody knows about the Hogan and the Nelson Bridges over by 12, but the one left of 15 is the Sarazen Bridge. And he walked across it with me. If it'd been today, I'd have it on YouTube somewhere, but it was quite an honor. Really, really cool being with Mr. Sarazen. He was a very special person. He could still play. He played very well. In fact, I think he shot 74 the day we played, which was pretty impressive.
Yeah, you had that sense of history. Crenshaw is certainly the guy who comes to mind as a massive historian. Are you a guy who understands and appreciates the history of the game? Sounds like you are.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I mean, I played with the history of the game. When you talk about the guys I played with all the way back, I mean, you know, I played with Sarazen, Burke, played probably 15 rounds with Hogan, more rounds than I can count with Snead, Palmer, Nicklaus, Casper, all those guys, you know. So I'm lucky that my era, you know, when I played, you know, I played with guys that were in their primes in the late 60s, early 70s, you know. So, yeah, I'm very much a historian of the game. I enjoy it very much. It's one way of staying involved.
Yeah. I mentioned about winning the 70 U.S. Amateur. So you beat Tom Kite in the final. Waverly Country Club, really good golf course, obviously, out in Oregon, one of the older clubs out in the Pacific Northwest. What, any particular memories, moments stand out from that week, that final, et cetera?
Yeah, it was that when I won, it was in the medal play era of the, if you will, of the U.S. Amateur. It was a stretch of 10 years where it was conducted at medal play, not match play. And so I had led early in the tournament, and then Kite had a big run, and I had gotten about five back of him going to the 54th hole. And I hold about a 70-yard wedge for eagle, and he made bogey. All of a sudden, I'm two back, then I birdied two and three the next day playing it with him. And we stayed head and head all the way. Last hole, I had a one-shot lead. He had a six-footer for birdie. I had a 20-footer, and I made it and put a – he had a horrible look on his face when I made that putt, but you know, I was kind of glad I put it there.
Hey, listen, Lanny, we've had a lot of great guests on Musings on Golf, and we certainly appreciate your time, but I think you may have just given the single best answer of anybody that's been a guest of ours when you said, history, I played with history. I mean, that is so good. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You should write a book, and that should be the title, I Played with History.
Well, it's pretty, you know, I played with a lot of guys all the way back. You know, I think this, you know, and I probably put Watson in that era, Watson, Mahaffey, you know, those guys that came through my Q school, you know, we transcended a lot of generations there, you know, all the way up into, you know, playing on tour with Mickelson. I was still on tour when Tiger came out. We never played together. Played in some tournaments he was in. But, you know, and so was, you know, Watson, obviously, same thing. So it was an interesting time. Would I like to have played for today's money? Damn right. I don't think I would. Yeah, Scottie Scheffler just made more the last 2 weeks than I made my entire career. So there you go.
How did it feel to beat Arnold Palmer by a shot to win your first PGA Tour event as a rookie? I believe it was in Las Vegas, the Sahara Invitational. What was that feeling like?
It was very cool. Actually, George Knutson had the lead on last day, and he did not play a good round. I played a good round, and I was finishing on 18. I was playing with Art Wall, and I had a six-footer for birdie who was going to lock the tournament up. It was a par five. He hit drive with it right up on the front of the green, and then went back off a false front. I missed my putt, and he took three from the front edge. He was not happy on several accounts. Number one, I cost him a win. Number two, I was still supposed to be at school in Wake Forest. I quit. And so, you know, so what would have been my senior year at Wake, I had a win, 4 seconds, finished 10th on the money list. So it was a good decision on my part. Arnold was not happy about it.
Considering the weather conditions, where did you win at the Players' Championship in 79 rank? And what do you think of what Scotty Scheffler did?
Well, I think what Scotty did, it was amazing. I was watching. It was just a spectacular round of golf. It felt like 63 or 4, whatever he shot, was about the worst he could have shot. It was, he just hit the ball magnificent. It was really something to watch. It was, he looked like he was in control of his game as much as anybody I've ever seen. I like watching a guy that really controls the golf ball that well, controls trajectory, moves it right, moves it left. He's got his putting back on track, and look out, he's right there. He can really play. But, winning the Players was special for me. I won at Sawgrass Country Club before they went to the TPC. Yeah. And it really didn't blow badly in the first 2 days. I think I had shot 67, 69. I had a 3-shot lead or so. I had shot a couple rounds in the 60s. Then it started blowing on Saturday. I shot 76 Saturday in the wind and maintained a 3-shot lead. I shot 72 on Sunday and increased my lead and won by 5 over Watson. I shot 5 under. I was the first person to ever break par at Sawgrass Country Club on the years they played there. So the wind was just unbelievable, but I could hit it downtown. I could hit it low if I needed to. And, when I was on with it, it was very good. And it was that week.
Hey, Lanny, for years, my summer vacation, because my dad, Max Elbin, was on the rules committee for the PGA Championship for years and years, my summer vacation, quite honestly, was wherever the PGA Championship was held. So I was there in 77 when you beat Mr. Littler in a playoff, and it was really historical. It was the first time, that a stroke play championship, major championship, had gone to sudden death. 20 years difference in age between you and Gene. And I think the crowd, there was a lot of sense of the crowd of maybe pulling for the older guy. What was that like down the stretch for you? You had to make some hugely clutch putts and then beating Mr. Littler in sudden death.
Well, it was very exciting. Number one, all of us were pulling for Gene. I mean, he was a favorite. I was playing the last round probably with Gene's best friend, Don January. And we were talking about Gene, what would this would mean to Gene to win today and get it done. And for me, I was grinding really hard because I had some surgery in December 74. So at this point, I was actually a non-exempt player. So I was grinding, trying to make the top 8 at Pebble Beach, and because top 8 would put me back in the Masters the next year. So that was my goal that day. So I had something I was grinding on, and got around to the end and saw the leaderboard there at 18, and Gene made some bogeys, and all of a sudden, Laddie Boy had a chance, and I stuffed it at 18, about 18 inches, made birdie. Yeah. Did not know we were going to have sudden death playoff. I was halfway through a beer that Ed Snead gave me, and they said, "Hey, you're on the first tee."
What? What did you think it was going to be? You think it was going to be 18 the next day, or what?
I thought it was 18 the next day. That's what it had always been. So I've been there watching Nicklaus stand over a 15-footer to tie me on 18. And I'm thinking, I really don't want Jack to make this. You know, a playoff against Jack on Pebble Beach where he's already won 2 majors, this may not turn out too well, for old Lanny Boy. So, I was not pulling for Jack at that point in time.
I can't imagine that you were. But you... 83, you were pulling for Jack in the most incredible way here at PGA National, not far from where I live, with the shot that you hit on the final day. Jack was the captain of that Ryder Cup team. Lanny, did you have, what's it like with so much on the line with that moment hitting and being able to execute that golf shot?
You know, Kelly, I think that what benefited me that day was I played so fast. And at the very end, when all that pressure is on, I mean, we'll be down to the only group left on the course besides me and Canizares was Watson playing Bernard Gallagher, I believe, and Watson was up and two to play. He had to win. I had to win the last and tie my match for us to win the Ryder Cup 14.5, 13.5. But I remember I had 82 yards to the flag on 18. I'd hit two good shots. The entire team is standing right there beside me. And a lot of times I played so fast that I would see a shot, and while I'm thinking about it, I'd say, never mind, the ball was already in the air. I'd hit it on pre-flight. I think this was one of those times, and I hit it in their bun foot.
Did you always play fast growing up and have that quick swing, or did it get faster over time? What?
I think we did as kids because we were trying to play so many holes. I think my brother and I were trying to, let's play 54 today. Let's play 72. I mean, we were just going round and round, and so we just played, moved along. So that was just part of what we did. I think it was the way we grew up playing, and, it was, a lot of ways it's beneficial. A lot of ways it wasn't on tour, because on tour, being a fast player, you have to adjust to everyone else. Nobody ever adjusted the fast player on tour, unfortunately.
Now, conversely, I'm wondering, do you think at all about the Ryder Cup that got away when you were captain of the 95 team at Oak Hill with the Europeans rallying on the last day? Does that stick in Lanny Watkins' crawl to this day, or did you let it go at some point?
I doubt I've let it go. My wife Penny and I put, 2 years of our life into that. I don't, you've been around your dad, who I knew and, love. He was a great man. And just getting to, work with the PGA for 2 years, we loved it. We'd been on 8 Ryder Cups. So it was a big, big part of my life. So it was not me to be captain and work with the PGA with, Julius Mason, Susan Martin, all the great people they've had there. And, spent a lot of time there. We did a lot of things right that week. We had, I had a 3-point lead with 11 matches to go. People forget that. We had 2-point lead going to singles. First singles match, Lehman beats Ballesteros. And so we've got 3 with 11 to go. We're looking pretty good. Our guys didn't get it done. The Europeans played well, and we just lost at the end. It was very disheartening. And I never forget, that night I can't sleep. My phone rings about 1:30 in the morning. It was Watson calling me. He said, I knew you'd still be up. So I wasn't asleep. So he called me to kind of commiserate, say, hey, you did everything you could. You didn't miss any shots. So it was very tough. It was, you want to be a winning Ryder Cup captain. I thought we did a lot right. And it was disappointing that it didn't turn out like we hoped.
I know we had talked about maybe getting your dream foursome. I'd like to hear that. But you've had a lot of comments about Phil Mickelson. You've had a lot of comments about LIV Golf. Do you have any feel, any sense of where this has to get some resolution so that we have the best players playing together much, much more than we're seeing now?
Kelly, it's interesting. I kind of put myself as somebody who's in golf and loves it very, very much. And then I put myself in the process of being a spectator as well. I mean, I spectate. I watch the game. I love the game. I really like seeing the players today. They've got to get this money grab status. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, all the way down from, the amount of money they're making and everything. I mean, good for them, but it's about more than money. The game has always been special. And in a lot of ways, they're putting themselves and money ahead of the game. And I hear this BS. They want to grow the game. They're not growing anything. It's a complete money grab, and it's sad to see. I don't see where it's, and now they want to wait back because they're not having fun with LIV. You see all the reasons they go to LIV, and it's, I want to play less golf. I want to spend more time with my family. Now they're playing more golf. They're traveling more around the world than they ever have. Unless they're taking their kids with them, they're not seeing them near as much. So, and then on our tour, I have yet to figure out why the purses have to get as big as they're getting right now. I mean, for Scotty, good for him. He won $4.5 million yesterday, but I don't know that I quite understand it yet, So anyway, it's, when I won the Players, I think I won either 72 or 63,000. That's a long way, to $4.5 million.
Did Phil's, no other way to say it, recruiting of players and poaching players, that upset a lot of people. Did that surprise you in any way that Phil was sort of the ringleader?
Yes and no. I think Phil was trying to get other players there to validate what he was doing. May have been the move. You'd have to ask him that. I don't know, but yeah, it's disappointing. It you know, they're making a lot of money, and you know, these are guys that they said they wanted to take care of their families down the line. Well, most of these guys were already worth $50 million or more anyway. So, it, you must have some really crappy money managers that you can't take care of that. That's all I gotta say. So it's, you know, the guys in my era would love to have had that problem.
Great, Kelly. Find out who he wants to play with.
Hey, Lanny, we do this with every guest in terms of a dream foursome. If you had three other players, whether they're three other people, whether living or deceased, who would round out your dream foursome, who would that be? Who would they be? And where would you play that one round of golf?
I would actually play a place that I've played with all three of the guys I want to play with. I would play at Pebble Beach. And when I was when I won the PGA, I played all three practice rounds with Arnold Palmer as my partner. So I would take Arnold at Pebble Beach, and I would play with my two boys who can really play. I would like them to have the experience of being around Arnold's 18 holes. I think it would be very special. So that's what I would like to do.
Well, you're very special, Lanny, and you do have something in common with Doug Sanders, because you can't forget that Ryder Cup loss, justifiably so. When I asked Doug about that putt, he misses at St. Andrews. Mm-hmm. Doug will answer, I say, Doug, you ever think about that putt? He'd say, hell no, Bob. Sometimes 5 minutes goes by without me thinking about it.
I can understand that. I've seen that putt missed the putts. The damnedest thing from that era when he missed that putt was Trevino's reaction.
Yeah.
I mean, go back and look at that. Lee, he was playing with Lee, and Lee kind of, I think he expected him to make it, and he just kind of went, ooh, got out of the way. You know, he didn't want to be any close to Doug after that. But, I mean, you got to go back and look at that putt sometime and look at Trevino's reaction. It's kind of priceless.
And your visit with us on Musings on Golf, certainly priceless. Can't thank you enough for joining us, Lanny. You gave us a lot of keen insight, a little bit of a walk in history. And personally, as an announcer, you do a great job on Golf Channel. I sometimes think it's unfair. You great players can turn around and work a mic, but I can't pick up a set of golf clubs and do what you do. So whatever you decide to do in the future, best of luck, my friend. You've been terrific.
Thanks, Bob. Great being with you and Kelly. It really was a special time. Thank you so much.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry.
All right, listeners, you've heard us talking for several months about a fantastic golf shoe that is now available to you, the William & Harry golf shoe. I proudly say it'll make you look better, it'll make you play better, it'll make you feel better. William & Harry, actually the leading edge right now in golf shoes, not only for function, but for style. Next opportunity you have, put on a pair of William & Harry golf shoes.
Yeah, and when you visit williamandharry.com, select your shoes and be sure to put in the code KECHARITY and the number 10. That's KECHARITY 10. Bob, we thank Lanny Watkins very much. I was, like you, so impressed with him. And not bad for a kid, as you said, who didn't grow up necessarily having the benefits of a golf course, you know, in his backyard type thing. But boy, did he make the most out of his career. And that bust is very proudly in the World Golf Hall of Fame.
Yeah, deservedly so. He, world-class talent, has been doing a great job on Golf Channel. We heard him allude to the fact that he may do it one more year. He may not. Those plans are up in the air. But whatever Lanny moves on to, we wish him the very best of luck. And once again, thank him so much for being a very special guest on Musings on Golf.
And next week, someone who Lenny knows very well, two-time Players Champion and the 1983 PGA Champion, Hal Sutton, will join us on Musings on Golf. Until then, Kelly Elbin, for my good buddy Bob Bupka, the peanut butter-eating fool, signing off, Musings on Golf.